I'm Tom, that's Mike, and my question to you, Mike, is what is your opinion on technology?
What?
You don't watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, do you?
You know what? I have it on the DVR, and I'm going
to... No, this past week's episode was on podcasts, so...
Or is it? Oh, really? You know what? I should have got that reference, but honest to God, like, I've been, like, in, like, sitcom overload lately where now that you say that, it does, you know, bring me back to that episode, because I think I actually did see it, but I've seen so much shit, like, I don't know. Yeah. I didn't get that reference at all. Sorry, buddy.
Which, by the way, did you get a chance to watch the steaming pile of crap that is Raising Hope?
No, but Raising Hope is renewed for a full season.
What? That is horrible.
Apparently apparently I saw on Twitter today, too, that Will Arnett's, like, desperate for people to get Running Wild. Any publicity at all, because I guess it's going down the shitter in terms of ratings, so.
Yeah, did you read that Hurwitz interview where he's pretty much like, yeah, Fox sucks because they want to hire everyone from Arrested Development, but then they don't want us to do Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there was an interview somewhere, yeah, it was absurd, and it made Fox sound like the biggest bunch of dingbats ever, which, I mean, they are, but.
I have that on the DVR, too, so. I guess I just recorded, what was it, just aired tonight, like the fourth episode, so I have all four episodes, so I don't know.
It's not an amazing show. It's not amazing, but it's finding its groove, and it's becoming a lot better. But again, dude, do you have IFC?
Yes, I do, yeah. Todd Margaret's on it.
Todd Margaret. That show is awesome.
I know.
I love that.
Show. That's another one. So there's a lot of good stuff on, a lot of hockey, a lot of wrestling going on, so...
Yeah,
I just got no time for it. If there was only that shitty thing called work that got in the way of everything, I guess life would be a lot easier, but such is life. So.
And speaking of you watching stuff not at work, you went to the Dub this weekend.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, the arena in South Phil. Make it real, Mike. Tell us what happened.
For It's Always Bloody in Philadelphia, so I guess a little pun on that TV show title there. But, it was a pretty good CZW show. Nothing, you know, it wasn't like a extraordinary show by any means, but I thought it was pretty decent.
And that's the full review, folks.
Yeah, and there you go. So our next subject.
No, I do have the results up in front of me. First thing I'm automatically interested about because, you know, they're
my neck of the woods. You want me to, like, run match. All right, as we talk over each other, as I was saying, how about instead of me running down the results like I usually do, what we can do is you ask me the questions this time first, so...
All right, first question, Michael Falcone. Yeah. Herrick the Great, an American kickboxer, I'm assuming, number two, because, you know, AKB1's not doing a whole lot anymore, because his brain's all loosey-goosey. So how was that?
I completely missed it. I was in my buddy's car drinking before the show, so I missed
that. That's what everybody does at CZW, I've noticed.
Yeah, I missed that. I missed that match, unfortunately.
That's a shame, because, yeah, I wonder how Tarek's holding.
Which is weird, because that aired significantly in between when I came in and then the event started. So, like, they must have had that dark match, like, 20 minutes in advance just to have something going on. Just, I don't know why, but...
And I also think it's insane that unless, like, they drove out with Moxley or something, like, they're from, like, Ohio. Like, I think Tarek lives out in, like, southern Ohio right now. Kickboxers out towards that way, or whoever the guy under the mask is, because they both work HWA, so they're out towards, like, Moxley's area, but they're also more towards, like, Kentucky, so...
That's weird.
That's a drive for them, unless, Moxley's just like, hey, I can get you on the show, or whatever's going on there. I'm very interested, Egotistico Fantastico finally realized that El Generico exists and there's no point for him.
Oh my God, this was awesome. All right, let me just get into this, because I'm going to plan on getting into it at some point. This was a great angle. I mean, obviously, let's start out with the very beginning, with Ego just taking his mask off without any mask versus mask match or anything like that. Like, he voluntarily took it off instead of, you know, building that up as something people would want to see. So I don't know if that's going to get any complaints, but actually, I thought it worked out really well, because he comes out. Because I guess he's been, like, you know, everyone's been booing him lately, and I guess he's been slowly turning heel, and I guess this was finally, like, the full-on, like, heel turn. And then he just takes his mask off, he calls himself, actually he didn't call himself anything, he went by the Ego Robert Anthony, which I believe was his name in Deep South Wrestling, wasn't it?
I believe Robert Anthony may or may not be his actual name, maybe. Okay. I know he's worked under Robert Anthony, like, around the Chicago Indies.
Yeah, I think he did go by that, though, in Deep South when he was in developmental. But anyway, so, like, he takes it off. He, you know, he cuts this great heel promo on the fans, and then he challenges Moxley to a match later that night. And I thought he worked really well because it's kind of like with Alberto Del Rio in a way, where, you know, you take the mask off the guy, and he has, like, a lot of great facial expressions. He has, like, a lot of, like, good charisma that you can see, like, now, like, with the mask off and stuff like that. So I really dug it. I thought that, and I thought the match later on that night was maybe, it was probably the best match that night. So it was a really good night for Ego, and I'm kind of excited to see what they're going to be doing, I guess, for Cage of Death now with him and Moxley.
And another thing I noticed, because I saw a picture of him on Facebook without the mask at the show on Saturday, maybe this is going to sound completely weird. He looks 30 pounds bigger without the mask. Maybe yeah. That's just me, but that, yeah, he looked gigantic in this picture. So maybe CZW isn't wellness testing anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to see him back in developmental sooner or later, right? I mean, you have to.
Well, they're signing back everybody that had a modicum of talent.
Yeah.
So, which, by the way, poor Brad Bradley. The world was convinced that guy was signed, and then he had to go to Facebook and be like, no, I didn't sign. Hang my head in shame.
Wait, who's Brad Bradley? Is that...
Bradley J, whatever. He was J. Bradley, Bradley J.
Is that the guy from Evolve whose mom died?
No, that was Brad Allen.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Brad Bradley was a dude from Chicago who was, like, he was, like, awesome in IWA Mid-South for, like, certain, like, in 2005 TPI, him and Tank, of all flipping people, and I loved Tank back then, but I cannot explain to you how him and Tank went out there and had, like, this 5-minute, like, sub-Samoa Joe Necro Butcher match without, like, all the blood and the weapons and stuff. Just two big old dudes running at each other repeatedly until one... fell down. It was awesome. No, check out some Brad Bradley. You'll not be disappointed. Like, I think he's mostly just working AEW now. He might be working FIP, but that's about it.
Okay. Oh, well.
He's good stuff. No, what other questions do I have about this card? Adam Cole. Okay, this is driving me nuts, because this is, like, the official CZW result deal. According to the CZW kayfabe dude of kayfabeness, it says Adam Cole, in full heel turn, brings out his TV belt and accidentally hits Veritas with it in the head.
Really?
You wouldn't be like, Vince McMahon wouldn't go on TV and be like, yeah, Ted DiBiase in full heel turn came out and offered a kid $10 to... bounce a basketball.
I'm on the website, so I don't see it, so I don't know, maybe if you're reading it from somewhere.
I'm on the CZW fans board where Brett Lauderdale, I almost called him Kurt Lauderdale, which is almost somehow worse than being Brett Lauderdale. He murdered a lady.
Yeah, that was the guy. That's who I keep thinking that guy is. Like, that's like, I'm like, why does that name sound so familiar?
Yeah, and he looks just
speaking
like
of what, speaking of what, yeah, and speaking of which, there's a pitcher for the Rays whose last name is Benoit, so...
Lovely.
Hope he doesn't kill his wife and son. But anyway, so what happened was Adam Cole came out and was, like, you know, mockingly cheering Tyler Veritas. And I think, like, he hit him with the belt and then Ruckus got the pin, so obviously Ruckus pinned Veritas. But, you know, the main story, though, was the Veritas and Cole. It's pretty much going to come to a head sooner or later, and I guess, you know, Veritas still has that money in the bank or whatever that he has, that... contract, whatever. So I'm thinking he's going to challenge Cole at Cage of Death, and it's going to be fucking great.
I sure hope so. That's where it has to go.
Better go that way.
Dude, it'll probably end up being like him against whichever German has the Ultraviolet Underground title by that point in like March for no reason. But no, I was mostly wondering, like, how is Adam Cole as a heel so far in this season?
Oh, he's great. I don't know if you probably heard the interview I did with on Alan's show with him, correct? Where he kind of said that he was going to be a heel, and like I was pretty much shocked by it, because like I only saw him really in CZW and in, like, you know, his brief time in Evolve, you know, as like a face. So I've never seen him as a heel. I heard that he worked like ROH dark matches as a heel, but I never saw it until like really until that night, and I thought he was great. Like, he is pretty cocky, you know, had like a good like swagger to him, so I kind of dug it. I think heel Adam Cole is definitely has like a lot of potential.
By the way, have you seen the ROH video wire?
I did, yes. And, like, him and O'Reilly's interview, you could barely hear it, though. Like, they need a microphone, those guys, or something.
Yeah, they need to microphone everybody. But is it just me, or is Kyle O'Reilly somehow looking younger than Adam Cole?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looked like a child next to Adam Cole. Adam Cole looks 12.
Yeah, Kyle O'Reilly looks really young. You have to watch They had a match at the Young Lions Cup.
Yeah, him and was it him and Cole, right?
Yeah, him and Cole.
Yeah, I like that match. I saw the Young Lions Cup. It was one of the few matches that did not disappoint me.
Yeah, what did you think about that venue? Not to steer too far away from the topic, but what did you think about the venue? Because I knew when I was there, I'm like, this is not going to translate well to film.
Not particularly. It kind of looked like the worst parts of like a few of their venues. Though, you know what venue sucked is I just watched the Baltimore show.
I haven't seen it yet. I have it, but I haven't even watched it.
It looked like they put about 100 people in a 1,200-person building. It just looked empty. Like, yeah. I'm sure that those people inside of, like, one of their other venues other than the arena, the place would look filled. But no, this place was gigantic. It looked bigger than the arena. Like, they had, like, bleachers way off in the background.
Oh, wow.
And it almost had the feel of, like, one of those shows at, like, a minor league baseball stadium, like, after the game.
Yeah.
Where, like, you have the ring in the middle of the stadium. And then, like, all the fans out in the bleachers. Yeah, it looked like that. It was something.
Oh, that's too bad.
But also, big thing here, like, big note of controversy, because apparently people were upset that DJ had did not announce the specific Japanese guy coming in. But yeah, apparently they aired a video for Nick Gage, and they're having him, the character, guess which one of the Japanese guys are coming in. And it said, like, find out who at Cage of Death 11. Like, did people crap on that live?
No, people kind of liked it because it was like, you know, find out who it's going to be, I guess. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we really had time. Now, you know, time to stop and analyze everything. You're kind of just seeing it and you're reacting to it. I'm hoping it's going to be, and I know Alan's going to kill me for forgetting this guy's name, but Sekimoto.
Mm-hmm.
I hope Sekimoto comes in. If not for that, I think, you know, if maybe for next year, if they plan on bringing these guys in, because that guy's great.
I just think it's kind of counterproductive to be advertising any of the other three guys that aren't coming in. Unless you have, like, all four of them show up, and then it's, like, a four-on-one on Nick Gage, and other guys come out, they're like, F you, too, let's have a four-on-four right now. But no, that's probably not what's going to happen.
I'm trying to think of, like, funny ways they could do that. Like, have, like, all four guys and then, like, decide who it's going to be. Like, how would they do that? Like, on,
Like, you could maybe have, like, the Soul Touchers entrance music play and then have one guy come out and start doing the dance and then the next guy start coming out and doing the dance. Because that's what they should do with the Soul Touchers in Chikara is, like, with each, like, major beat, have one come out and then have another come out. Because it would look totally cool. But nobody will listen to me.
No.
You should have the Japanese guys do that. Or have them all come out in masks. And then Nick Gage has to, like, beat them all up and unmask. He has to guess which one's the Japanese guy. And if he unmasks the right guy and unmasks the Japanese guy, he wins, like, $1,000.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, what kind of, like, funny game show premise could we use for it? You know what I mean? But
which reminds me, dude, on that channel, that awesome, awesome channel we were talking about, there's a game show. I forget if we started talking about it when we started recording, did we?
No, I think we talked about it before we came on
the air. Okay, there's a new channel on the air that is like Discovery Kids times Nick at Night times Awesome. And there's a game show on there that is like, I was trying to get to that. Thank you, Alex. It's Hasbro Family Game Night, which has, you know, it has like Sorry and...
Yeah.
And, but it has like big game show versions of them. So it's like Double Dare meets like Monopoly.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. It debuts Friday, and I cannot wait.
That sounds intriguing. Do they have, like, old game shows on that, by the way, or no?
It just looked like they had that Endurance show, and they have another show based off of, like, this win-loser-draw-looking game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is very unfortunate, but...
And Happy Days and Wonder Years. Hey, Wonder Years, man, that's gonna get... I mean, that's pretty cool, so
We're getting to any sort of archiving in the modern day, because they're not making DVDs of that show.
Absolutely not. So.
Speaking of DVDs, something that should sell some DVDs is, in December, Jushin Liger is wrestling at the arena.
Yeah, isn't that something? Jushin Liger, Danny Havoc, all on the same show, together at last. I think it's going to be great.
What if Nick Gage attacks Jushin Liger thinking he's like Miyamoto?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited for this, to be honest with you, just because, like what a mindfuck of a night that's going to be, like with all these different kind of matches and stuff like this, you know, so...
And, like, one thing I saw that irritated me on some message board is, like, somebody that hates Quack went on there and was like, yeah, I'm going to go to the show and I'm going to get drunk and I'm going to heckle Quack so that it ruins his night. I'm like, dude, the guy is a douchebag. I get it. Whatever crap he does, you know, behind closed doors, whatever. That's his deal, as long as he's not, like, petting kids or murdering anybody. But we all have dreams, and his dream is to wrestle Jushin Thunder Liger. Let him have his 15 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, good for him, you know. It's nice for him, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, just let him have it. I beg of you, drunk people, don't, you know, be drunk during, you know, the heavy hitters or the Southside Players Club or whatever other team with an A and a Z at the end of their name.
I am really excited, by the way, about the Southside Players Club to see them in, what do you call it, to see, like, them in the arena. I think that's going to be crazy.
I just hope it isn't a case where, like, because the League of Legends fans
I really hope, like, they don't hold back on that entrance, you know what I mean? Because you know that if they do the same entrance that they do, at the rec center, it's gonna be great.
Why is there a duck?
That was my alarm. Even though I live in like an apartment where there's like where there are ducks right next door, so that's why I have a.
You have an alarm that goes off at 11:04 p.m.
11:05 p.m.
Wow. So apparently the world clock is behind a minute of yours.
Maybe it is from lovely Indianapolis, Indiana to Philadelphia.
I'm in Lafayette, thank you very much.
Lafayette.
90 minutes away. 90
really?
Minutes away.
That's a distance. I'm sorry.
That's perfectly fine, my friend. What else happened on this show? Nick Gage wrestled Greg Axel, and hopefully that's his exit from the in-ring portion of CZW. Because I didn't notice it. I did not know that was Greg Axel on the Southern Violence DVD, or whatever that show's called.
Yeah, Nick Gage came out and beat Greg Axel. Basically, what happened was he kicked his ass for, I think, 2 minutes and then pinned him. So it was basically a squash, obviously. And then afterward, they had the whole Big Japan thing. And hopefully they write off Greg Excellent and move him to the commentary booth because he's a great commentator. And I think maybe if the guy has a passion for the business, maybe that would be the better place for him. So I'd put him there.
All right, I mean, I don't know. Have you seen the Down with the Sickness, whatever it's called, whatever year it
no,
is?
No, I was at my buddy's wedding for that show, so I missed it live, and then I haven't watched it yet on DVD.
Okay, Joe Dombrowski from IWC and ROH is, like, he's not amazing on that show, but he's, like, light years away of everyone since at least the Gargiulo House team.
Yeah.
Like, because he actually sounds like he kind of cares. Though, it was mostly in the four-way with the guys that I figured he already knows.
Yeah, you would think, right? Like, yeah. Most of them were familiar more than, like, the, you know, Adam Cole, the other guys. But
yeah, though that match is frustrating because it got, like, half the time of, like, you know, other matches that should not have gotten. Like, I understand, you know, Irish Drive-By, they've gotten really awesome lately. But when you have a match with the potential of, like, Gargano and Taylor and whoever else was Tammy and, you know, whoever else was the fourth guy, I think it was Joker, let him have a little bit more time than 7 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah, is that how long it went? That's pretty
Yeah, like 7 or 8 minutes. They immediately obviously went to the big stuff. And, you know, Robbie Moreno was terrible in commentary, but Joe Dombrowski brought it up. Yeah, Robbie Moreno, like, the only stuff he would yell is, like, Joker's a trained MMA fighter. He is trained to tap you out and knock you out. That's all he would say over and over and over again, and I wanted to punch him.
See, there's no commentary option. But anyway, like I said, let's just go. I just want to get through the rest of this just because we have other stuff to talk about, obviously, and I'll kind of just cut out all, like, the nine stuff the Drake heel turn. I knew there was one like other big thing I had to talk about real quick. But before that, real quick, Rich Swann beat Amasis, Sabian and Ryan Slater. Just a fun match, nothing really more than that. Rich Swann kind of looked a little off, so I guess, you know, everyone has their off night.
Random butting in question. Are they calling Ryan Slater emo again?
No, they're calling him Ryan Slater.
Okay, because the official CZW results call him emo.
Really?
Which, yeah, I'm like, if they're really going back to that, that's disappointing, because he's...
Yeah, we're looking at two completely results, I think.
Yeah,
so
go
I'm
on the CZW
really sure.
message board, that's where
do
Mr.
I really
Lauderdale has
to?
Posted them. That's where I went, because I figured that's where they'd be, and the CZW website hurts my eyes sometimes.
Yeah.
It's all like, hey, I'm black, but I got colors over here, colors over there.
Anyway, whatever. But, no, he's going as Ryan Slater still. The next match was Drake Younger and Danny Havoc. Basically what happened was they had Danny Havoc and Devin Moore basically had 100 times better of a match than it had any right to be, because I really don't think those guys are, you know, that great at actual technical wrestling and stuff like that. But, you know, they did a passable job in this case, I thought. But what happened was, I guess 13 and Lucky, whatever his name is, and Billy Grant came out and kind of attacked. I think they attacked both guys, and then Drake and Scotty Vortex came out. I think they were like going to stand off on somebody, and then Drake kind of hit Scotty Vortex, and you didn't see it coming. So it was pretty. I thought it was a pretty good heel turn, in my opinion. I don't know, like it was just kind of shocking, and like people were kind of still cheering him on. You know, that the Drake heel turn ended the first half of the show. So it was a pretty good first half, in my opinion. I guess it started out pretty good too with the second half with like we just discussed with DJ Hyde and the guy from Jersey All Pro announcing that they're gonna have the doubleheader. So I think that's gonna be, like I said before, you know, a fun day of show. So. You know, that's that. And then I think I already talked about the Moxley Ego match. So
when did Moxley turn babyface?
The thing is, like, yeah, when did he? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like, if it was people just started just cheering for Moxley all of a sudden or what, because it's not like I don't really remember him, like, actually turning face where he's, you know, accepting the crowd's cheers. You know what I mean?
I remember, like, around, was it this past Cage of Death where he had the 4-way with Eddie Kingston and Ego and all of them, or was that, like, 2 years ago?
That was the past Cage of Death. I thought
okay.
That was a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time. I remember Moxley being way more over than I thought, like, he would be with that crowd, because I didn't think he'd been around long enough to have that not necessarily Nick Gage to that volume, but that style of, you know, we respect you for being awesome type pop that, like, the only guys that they like and they're going to get. But, yeah, so apparently they like Moxley, so DJ figured, well, I turn him. They already like him.
Yeah. That's
cool. Let me eat my chicken. That's what DJ Hyde does. He eats chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of chicken, Sami Callihan, you're a chicken. Not really, but you wrestled Homicide. How did that go down?
It was a good match. It just kind of ended abruptly. Like, it kind of ended just with the Homicide giving Sammy the Ace Crusher, and then just kind of ended. So it wasn't really much of an ending, to be honest with you, but that was that. It just kind of ended. You know what I mean? Like, it was just really weird. And then post-match was with Gacy, and then Homicide, like, sided with Sammy, so... I really hope they don't end up doing, like, Homicide and Joe Gacy or something like that. That'd be shitty.
Did you get the feeling that Homicide's around to stay? Because it just kind of sounds like he's in for one show and then he's gone.
Yeah, he may just be, you know what I mean? Because, you know, he kind of sided with Sammy, and that kind of like, got the Sammy-Joe Gacy thing going a little bit more. So maybe, you know, it just kind of used Homicide as just a guy to have a match with in the meantime.
Which kind of sucks, because honestly, like, Moxley, after he's done with Ego, who does he have left to work with on top? You know, so I mean, you could get at least one more show out of Homicide with Moxley, unless Gabe's all like, no, I want that Moxley match. Don't do that, DJ. DJ's like, okay, I respect you, Gabe. I will not.
Yeah, that's
what
I was hoping they'd bring back Hero, like, and have, like, Hero and Moxley, because I thought Hero looked pretty good in that Ego match that he had in CZW back in May, June, or whatever it was.
And so. Then they have, like, a built-in story that, like, Moxley brought in Hero to stop Ego, and he didn't stop Ego, so...
Exactly.
So he didn't get his money's worth, so there, instant story. But apparently, DJ Hyde is too concerned with only using one half of the Osirian portal. Yeah, that really makes sense. Whatever, DJ Hyde. So, next topic. I forgot what we're going... The Bluegrass Brawl, I think.
The Bluegrass Brawl.
Yes! So I watched this, like, 2 weeks ago, I think, now. And I meant to talk about it last show, but we had too many things going on. Lots of Kurgan. The Kurgan in sitcoms to discuss.
Yeah.
No, like, this is, like, I don't watch a lot of the ROH DVDs, because they don't really interest me. Like, even when, like, Gabe was booking, I'd watch, you know, I watched all the Chicago ones, because they're the closest market to me, and, you know, I've actually been to the Frontier Fieldhouse, so I don't, maybe it sounds weird, but they're more interesting to me, because I've been in the building, I know the feel for the shows, you know, I don't want to see how they go down, because that's kind of my market, you know, I don't know, maybe that doesn't make sense. And then I watched, like, the New York shows, and I watched part of the Philly shows, because that's where the big stuff went down for the most part. I'd skip Dayton, and, you know, but the Bluegrass Brawl...
Yeah.
Interested me because it's ROH in a new building that I'm very familiar with, because it's OVW's building in Louisville, and I've been there multiple times, and I've seen these people react very well to some horrible wrestling. So I just wanted to see how they'd react to, you know, decent stuff, you know. I'm not saying ROH is amazing by any stretch of the imagination, but compared to some of the stuff OVW's put on in the past 3 years, yeah, for sure. And it was an interesting show. Like, first off, people, like, all over the internet, I've heard about how, you know, the OVW guys, they thought stunk it up. And maybe I'm biased, they did not stink it up by the only OVW guy, I'm stuttering over my words, that I thought really stunk it up was Mike Mondo. Like, have you seen the show?
I have not.
Okay, Mike Mondo, he's kind of doing like a mini Davey Richards thing, if that even makes sense, mini Davey Richards. I think Mondo is shorter than Davey, which is scary to think of. But, no, he's doing this deal, he's got the playing tights, playing kick pads, and he's like, "Oh, I'm mean," and he does suplexes and stuff, and it's all right in an OVW show, because you got all these, like, really green guys with, like, wacky gimmicks, and then you have one guy that's, like, halfway decent for, like, ROH style coming out, and, like, it's unique, and it's good on an OVW show. And then you have Mike Mondo on an ROH show, with 20 guys that work that style better than he does.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And him and Delirious went out there, and Delirious is, like, trying to do, like, a touring comedy match. He does all of his old spots, you know, the bah-bah-bah, and he runs around the ring, and he does the wet willies and such. And
yeah.
People were eating that up, and then Mondo, I don't know if it was something Mondo called or what, but they decided to go into a 20-minute generic, boring, you know, 2005 ROH third match on the card style match. And it went on for so long, and it was so boring, and I think I ended up skipping, like, the last 5 minutes of it, because it was so dreadful. And you know who I honestly stole the, like, majority of that show up until the main event was some VW dude that I've been, like, trying to get hype for forever. His name's Paradise. He is, like, Adrian Street and Goldust mixed together. It looks like a little bit of Jimmy Jacobs. It's a really bizarre and lovely gimmick. And he, like Nick Manawa, my good buddy, Nick Glenn, if you're nasty, call him that. He was there, and he watches OVW most weeks like I do. And he thought Paradise, quote-unquote, gated up too much. He did, you know, a lot of the typical generic pro wrestling gay spots. But I thought he almost thought he didn't gay it up enough. Because he did it all, like, the beginning, and then he, like, just, he cut it all out, like, towards the end for the most part. And, you know, his opponent, you know, the OVW Beef Wellington, who's actually now in Florida Championship Wrestling under a developmental deal as, I believe his name is Brad Maddox, dating coach. Which, yes, I believe the dating coach part is part of his name, believe it or not.
Yeah.
That guy sucked. That guy was brutal. He might have been actually the worst guy on the entire show. Paradise, man, that guy was... Yeah. Why he's not booked for Dayton, Chicago, I have no idea. Maybe Delirious is all like, grr, serious wrestling, all of a sudden, which makes no flipping sense. Because there is an OVW car going to the Dayton show, at least, because, you know, Josie and Mondo are on the show.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, Paradise, like, if that show was in, like, Philly, and Paradise worked a random opening card match at, like, ROH TV, not ROH TV necessarily, but, like, at Dragon Gate USA or something, if he went out there and did, like, a five-minute version of that match with someone who was halfway decent, he'd be, like, the talk of the internet right now, because he's so different. Because he's a guy that does not go out there and try to do moves, but he has such a unique style. It's almost like a Jon Moxley. Where his bumping style is so unique, and it's like a throwback to the old Memphis, like, wild bumping style that the heels would do when the babyfaces would come out and make the saves during the big angles. Mm-hmm. He flip-flopped and flew everywhere for good old Beef Wellington, and it was awesome, and I loved him, but apparently, like, the world hated him. So whatever, world... Joe Gagne knew what he was doing when he started fighting you, world.
Do you think that... That's a good one. Do you think that... he'll be on the TV tapings?
I hope so. Like, I figured they'll use, like, local guys for job spots, but at the same time, I don't want to see Paradise used as a jobber in his own, like, his home market, you know what I mean? Because, like, he's got to come back to that building the next week and do TV and be over. Mm-hmm. So if his home market sees him as a job guy for, like, the special guys, then it's going to kill his heat right there. But at the same time, I totally see, because Cornette's got such an erection for ROH right now that I could see Cornette being like, "Hey, all the talented guys come to TV and get beat up. Why? Just do it, because I'm Jim Cornette."
Just do it.
because I could see Ted McNaylor being on the tapings as a jobber, just because I see Ted McNaylor as that type of guy that would do anything for anyone.
Yeah,
he's Ted McNaylor, and I see Revolver doing it for the exposure. I really hope Paradise.
I thought
he
was
going
to be on, because I think they're going to do someone Alvarez just to get Alvarez to pop. You know what I mean? Just
yeah. Well, that's because Lagana's got his fist up Alvarez's butt.
Yeah, so they're going to do something.
Or Alvarez actually has his fist up Lagana's butt because he's the puppet. Because Lagana puppets everything that guy says. Have you noticed that? Like, all the UFC Gaga and, like, everything. Lagana spouts everything Alvarez loves, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. God bless the guy, but. Yeah.
I wonder if I honestly, and this not to talk about this forever here, but I honestly wonder if he booked that Papa Briscoe and the Briscoes versus Kings of Wrestling and Hagenorm because Alvarez was like, this would be the greatest match of all time.
I'm almost positive of it. As the co-conspirator of the very first big Brian Alvarez scheme on the Indies, I'm sure he did it. I'm, of course, referring to when myself and my good friend
Mike
Brian Alvarez halfway across the country.
Basically, the whole basically we can talk about this without sounding like assholes.
That's like
because
O.J. Simpson calling Kareem Abdul-Jabbar black.
I want to get you and Sinbad. I think we got to do a show, and we'll talk about this right on the air here. I want to do like a show with like you and Sinbad about like the. I know you already did, but like there's probably like so much more you could talk about just for those two shows. You know what I mean? So.
I don't know if there is, honestly. his memory shot about it, and mine's going. Like, I think the best you've got is what we recorded, like, a long time ago. And I can try to salvage it and, like, archive it, but... I'm pretty sure he said after we did our show that that's the last time he was ever willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't blame him, because it was a bad time, honestly.
Yeah, but hey, you know, maybe it was.
It was. I lost a lot of friends during that time. I've gained most of them back, but... I'm serious, too. A lot of us were at each other's throats, and we could not stand each other for a while. I didn't talk to him for, like, a year.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Thanks
got,
Mike.
I was going to say, things got really deep.
Yeah.
Really
sometimes deep. I write poetry about it. What a fight.
Want to fight about it? But anyway, yeah, Bluegrass Brawl. Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, let's see, Tyler and Claudio, like, it was like an average ROH main event, but, like, these people haven't seen good wrestling, so they went nuts for it, like it was a bunch of cavemen around a candle. Ooh, fire, light, what's this? Like, and, I mean, the match wasn't bad. I mean, the only really bad thing was Tyler did this spinning wheel kick, which I'm not, like, too familiar with ROH main events anymore to know if he does it all the time, or used to do it, but, like... It's like a slingshot spinning wheel kick into the ring, and it just kind of looked like the guys fell down with each other and went, whee! You know, it looked so much like so much fun, but it did not look painful whatsoever and looked terrible. I mean, the Briscoes and the Wolves had their same match with the bazillion kickouts. And
yeah, I was going to say, like, this...
It was a good show, and, like, in front of any other crowd, it would have been, eh. But this crowd has never seen anything like this live. So they went nuts for it. So it was kind of cool in that way. And, I mean, I'm trying to think of any other thing. Like, Hero and Cabana, since they haven't worked in a while, like, since, I think, 05, 06. Like, even, like, 06, I think it was a four-way. So they haven't worked, like, a singles in a long, long time. And that was fun, because Hero got to do the cutesy little European stuff that he hasn't gotten to do in a while. And Cabana got to do some of his Ham Colt Cabana type stuff, which he hasn't gotten to do again.
I would imagine that would be good.
Yeah, like in that feud with Carino and Steen, you know, it's been an awesome feud, but he hasn't gotten to do the Colt Cabana shtick.
Exactly, yeah.
And he got to do it on this show, since this show really seemed like it was ROH guys in another universe.
Yeah, how was Sarah Del Rey and Daisy Hayes? Was that just your usual match?
Your usual match. I was kind of offended that Daisy went over, because it's like... I'm not one of those type of people that gets, like, mad necessarily at... Oh, random match doesn't mean anything, but it was booked wrong, so I'm terribly upset, and I'm going to write about it on a wrestling message board for 8 hours.
I'm actually really pumped up to watch the Hate Chapter 2 and the Chicago show from the next night.
What the hell is Hate Chapter 2?
Hate Chapter 2. Yeah.
Is that some WXW show? That sounds so German death metal-y.
I know, doesn't it? I don't even know what Hate Chapter 1 was, but apparently Hate Chapter 2 is Kevin Cena and Generico. And the Young Bucks and the American Wolves, I think, so...
Wait, the Young Bucks and the American Wolves hate each other so much that there's a chapter two?
Apparently so.
See, I didn't even, the Young Bucks didn't even hate the Machine Guns, and they just had a title feud with them. So I can't even imagine their hate towards the Wolves would be, you know, hey, we're matching guides too, I don't like you.
We'll get into the Young Bucks in a minute, but I mean, apparently that they do hate each other enough, because I did see the Young Bucks and the Wolves battle... at their first match that they had the TV tapings, and it was fucking great. It was awesome. So I guess this, in a way, is the Hate Chapter 2, although I think it's more so for, like, the Generic Osteen stuff, which I'm sure is awesome. But the Young Bucks and the Kings of Wrestling wrestled the next night in Chicago, and I guess that... I mean, how could that not be great, too, you know? So.
Which, by the way, let me just say, if you're a Chicago-area wrestling fan, take your thumb and shove it out of your butthole. Because I've read, like, a ton of people on the Chicago wrestling board, like, the day after that ROH show. Like there would be, like, people that don't necessarily hang around in, like, that community. They're like, man, that match was awesome, and, like, whose opinions I would kind of trust. And then, like, everyone that goes to, like, every crappy show in Chicago was like, man, I hated that, because the Young Bucks, they did, like, cartwheels. Fuck them.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said the F word. I was like, apologizing
like,
to the few.
All right, like, here's... Oh, yeah, you shouldn't curse in front of your girlfriend.
I shouldn't curse in front of her. It's a bad habit. She's a lady. Yeah. She has breasts.
Exactly.
And like, they're like... The thing is, I'm looking at them right now. It's awesome. Cohabitation, everybody. You should all experience it once before you die.
Yeah, at least once, or you will die. But anyway, what happened was...
What was that? At least once, or you will die.
Nah, we'll talk about it some other time, but basically, you know, living with a girl, I guess you gotta find the right one, you know what I mean?
Yeah, or she'll kill you, apparently, according to what you're saying.
No, not like you want to kill each other, but like, when I was gonna live, I was gonna plan on living with the one girl I was dating in, I think like my junior college or whatever like that, we were gonna get like a place, and then, I'm just thankfully we didn't, and hey, that's that, I guess.
I'm not gonna dig too deep myself. Yeah,
you know,
it's like Raven said after they crucified the Sandman that one time. I'm not gonna get too much into your personal lives if you don't get into mine.
Yeah,
that's anyway. A little bit awkward. Awkward stall to that whole.
No, I'm only
about ROH, and then all of a sudden your past relationship failures came into play.
Nah, it's cool, man. But anyway, speaking of the Young Bucks, I guess, and we'll get to our final topic here. You wanted to bring up the Young Bucks and the Motorcycle Machine Guns from Bound for Glory.
Bound for Glory. Bound and
Gadsden.
Actually,
I figured, I was going to say we might as well just talk about Bound for Glory since it's, you know, topical and stuff like that.
Well, I only watched, like, three matches of it, so. Did you watch the whole thing?
I actually did, so I'll give my thoughts when you're done with yours.
Yeah, the Machine Guns and Jinmi. Okay. This match should have been, like, really good, because the previous month, they had an awesome, like, straight-up match. Like, they cut out, like, a lot of the BS, you know, instead of doing, like, 5 minutes of an actual match and 15 minutes of bing, bang, boom, finish, they built a match, and it was, like, shockingly solid beyond the really cool high spots. And I really thought, you know, because there were the rumors around they were going to do the Ultimate X, you know, stunt show match after this. And I was like, no, let them do, like, 2 out of 3 falls and establish the Machine Guns, you know, like the Briscoes were in ROH, it was the Kings of the 2 out of 3 falls match, where you can, you know, you can win a non-title regular match against them, but if you get them a 2 out of 3 falls match, man, don't mess with the Machine Guns. They know what they're doing. But then they gave them, like, another straight-up match, and I'm like, this is very good news, because these teams, especially with the story they have of, you know, Jinmi taking out Shelley's neck and trying to take out Sabin's, you know, they should be mad, they should come out all fiery and, you know, wanting to... Exactly, Gurr, thank you. I got a Gurr in the background for you that did not hear that. But no, like, they should be all, you know, full of piss and vinegar wanting to rip off the... you know, Generation Me's heads, and, you know, that finisher to do the neckbreaker with the splash, it should be a deal where, like, Saban holds, you know, Max Buck for the neckbreaker, and Shelley's like, haha, I'm gonna break your neck now, and then he breaks his neck, you know.
Yeah.
But instead, they just had a regular, you know, the match they would have had at, like, a PWG, let's say. Right, you know, they don't really, you know, they do a basic story where, you know, Jinmi gets the heat, but then they do, you know, the Machine Guns do the comeback, and they did a lot of really cool moves. Don't get me wrong, and, you know, it wasn't, like, completely devoid of story, but it was so disappointing on that end, because it was such an easy story to tell. You immediately take out Shelley with the neck, you get the heat on the neck, And then Saban makes the comeback, but, you know, his neck's kind of weak, so that's where they can, you know, go back and forth. And then Shelley finally wins the match by, you know, messing up one of the Jinmi guys' necks with that finisher there, so the neck breaker deal. You know, they didn't play that up, like, at all. It just was bing, bang, boom, here's a cool suplex off the top rope, here's Chris Sabin flying with his feet up in the air. Woo! It was a match. It was a good match. It was the best match on the show. But man.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was an awesome match, actually. But, like, it was missing that fire to it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly.
He was missing that, like, that purpose. Like, don't get me wrong, I could watch Generation Me and the Machine Guns wrestle 7 days out of the week, you know what I'm saying? I could watch them wrestle all day. But, like, this match, what it was missing to me when I was watching it was just, like, it wasn't like a blood feud. Like, it wasn't, like, a little harder, you know, harder hitting and stuff like that.
Yeah, it didn't, like, need, like, blood, obviously. But, yeah, it should have, if this is going to be the end of the feud, then, yeah, have Chris Sabin, you know, not Sabin, but Shelley land that splash a little bit closer to the neck and grr on the top rope and do, like, the symbolic ending of the feud and do more stuff related to Machine Guns are pissed off instead of Machine Guns are going to do this flip to block your flip and then do this thing off the top rope to reverse your thing off the top rope. Gymnastics are cool, and this match is a really cool match in, like, a vacuum. And if they did this at, like, ROH is like, a touring indie match, it would tear the house down. But for this specific situation, it was not the right match.
Exactly. Like, if I was to watch this match, like, as just a standalone, not even caring about the storylines, I'd probably get into it a lot more. I think the only reason I'd really want to criticize it is because it had that potential to be, like, awesome. You know what I mean? Like, this is, like, apparently the big show of the year. And they had a chance to, like, have, like, this, like, you know, this killer tag match. And I just thought they had, like, your very good indie wrestling tag match, you know what I mean, with, like, a lot of great spots. But wasn't quite that match I was anticipating, you know. So
exactly. Though, you know, Dave Meltzer and Wade Keller just loved it, so whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, like, that's the bad part of that is because it was a good match. It just wasn't. The right context for it, you know, so.
And, you know, maybe it's because, you know, the guys like the Meltzers of the world and, you know, those type of TNA fans, you don't get to see the Guns all over the place, don't get to see the Bucks all over the place. They have these matches, like, every stinking night everywhere. They're not, you know, so accustomed to the same awesome Machine Guns match they've had everywhere, you know, so it's... I just wanted to see them do a little something different, because TNA, honestly, as much as that place sucks a lot of the time, it is a place where guys like the Machine Guns can go have the matches like they've had with Beer Money, you know, which are completely different from what they've been doing everywhere else. And, you know, I'm sure Magnus and Desmond Wolfe, if Nigel wasn't a complete wreck, would have been another completely different dynamic compared to, you know, every other Machine Guns indie dream match, you know what I mean? So
that whole thing really has me, like, worried with Desmond Wolfe with Nigel, you know?
That's really
sketchy, especially considering the fact, like, that TNA are just so they don't give a shit about their employees as it is, you know? So, like, if they're actually taking this guy off the road, there must be something going on.
I'm almost thinking, you know how that whole drug test story came out, like, everyone got drug tested but nobody got disciplined.
Yeah,
I'm almost thinking, because, you know, Dixie seems like the kind of person that would spend all that money just so nobody would accuse her of singling anyone out. I'm almost thinking she spent all that money to give everyone physicals just so they could get some sort of proof that there's something wrong with this guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's the conspiracy theorist in me. Speaking of conspiracy theorists, the one part of the show I loved, and the one part of the show, the impact before it that I loved, Eric Young. Like, it's a complete step backwards for his character, but he might be better than Cabana at that comedy shtick. Like, he might be the best guy in the business at doing that type of character. I was rolling during that match for some of those spots.
I think Eric Young is maybe, like, one of the most underrated guys in wrestling, and that's not to, like, that's just, what I mean by that is, like, he's not, like, you know, he's not, like, a fantastic worker, but he's such a great bumper. He's a solid worker, and, like, he's funny. It's just that the situation that he's in right now is just so, is just so bad for him like that. Like, he's desperate for, like, a new change of scenery. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, like, the thing about it is, it's not just, like, he's been underrated, like, the past year or so. He's been underrated since, like, 2004. Like, that guy was the best part of Team Canada. That guy was the best part of whatever he was doing afterwards. I completely forget because it's TNA. You know, he almost made that stupid superhero deal work.
Exactly.
And, you know, World Elite, that thing was kind of, you know, DOA because it was just way too watered down. But Eric tried his damnedest to, you know, make his rip-off Chris Jericho thing work. And now he's back to doing apparently what the only thing they think he's good at. But, you know, he's somehow making Orlando Jordan, like, not necessarily worth something, but to where I kind of almost want to see these two on TV every week just to see what hijinks they're going to get into.
Yeah, what wacky shenanigans and tomfoolery.
Exactly. Like, that's the only good comedy TNA has done in, like, a long time. Like, they used to be really good at comedy. Like, Meltzer brought up on one of those radio shows a few weeks ago, like, the one time they did a skit with Eric Young in it, incidentally, where, like, they had a funeral for someone's career. And they actually did, like, funny WWE bashing. Like on the guest list, it said, like, Pat and Sylvain. And, like, they quickly glanced by it just long enough to where you could see it, but not long enough to where it's like, hey, guys, that's Pat Patterson and Sylvain Grenier. They're gay together.
Yeah.
You know, it worked, you know, but now not so much. But, hey, Eric Young, that guy needs to make, like, a bajillion dollars.
Yeah, here's a match for everyone to check out. It's Team Canada versus America's Most Wanted from,
which,
like,
volume? Because there's, like, 87 of those.
What do you mean? Which volume?
America's Most Wanted against Team Canada. They wrestled, like, 87.
Oh, which one? I was going to specify. From, like, Final... I think it's from Final Resolution 2005. It was whatever the January pay-per-view was that had the Ultimate X match with Sabin, Petey Williams, and... AJ Styles. So, it's awesome. It's like, if you want to see how great Eric Young used to be, or actually not like he used to be, like, as he isn't anymore, but I mean, obviously he isn't because he's a comedy character now, but if you want to see the potential that guy had at one time, that's the fucking match you gotta check out. Like, so...
Well, that, and going back, like, even to, like, remember that first World X Cup he came in for, where he had that ladder match with, like, Hector
Garza? Oh, yeah.
Where he just decided, hey, I'm going to commit suicide as many times as humanly possible on these ladders.
Yeah, and when they did, when PD came in and did the Canadian Destroyer for the first time, I remember that.
Yeah, those were fun times, and I'm, you know, Eric Young's a crazy man, and I love him for it.
Yeah.
And you brought up AJ earlier, something I want to bring up, that Fortune group, you know, they might be like 84 members too deep. They have a presence about them, like, together, that they don't have apart.
I agree. I like them. I don't know why I do, but I like them. I even like Matt Morgan in it for some reason. I hate Matt Morgan.
Like, them walking down the ramp at, like, before that lethal lockdown or whatever they're calling it, they felt like a major league group. Like, they were the only guys on the entire show that felt like... Okay, these guys could be walking down for the main event at WrestleMania and not be completely out of place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
I agree.
Every single one of those guys came off like a big star, to the point where, like, Ric Flair's in the middle and you're kind of like, hey, there's Ric Flair. What's he doing there? Like, their presence together almost overshadowed of all dudes' bulgy McSag face.
Oh my god, Ric Flair. Jesus Christ.
And I didn't watch the match, but the Brian Kendrick thing was kind of funny. Because, I mean, if you can't get Paul Linden, might as well get the guy that used to team up with him doing his shtick.
Yeah, right.
But, and then I watched most of the main event, and it was kind of disappointing. Not really.
I was just, that main event, it was like, when you watched it, it was like, all you thought about the entire time was when's the running going to come in, you know? So, it was like, I couldn't get into the match because, like, I knew something was going to be happening, so.
Well, it was like... People really loved, like, the Angle Hardy match, or they really hated it, one or the other. Like, they had really strong opinions. I watched the first one. Didn't really get into it either way. In the second one, you know, it was even worse in that direction, in terms of just not being able to care. And this was exactly the same way, but, like, 1,000 times worse, because Ken Anderson has that effect on me.
Yeah.
Though that video before the match... That is the best thing that David Sahadi has ever done. And he's done a lot of awesome videos. But I'm just glad he's gotten out of that whole, you know the videos he used to do, like 1 million years ago, evolution.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And today AJ Styles does a flip off the top rope, and it has some.
Yeah, I just like good music videos and stuff like that. Like music when it's wrestling, when it's set to the right music, can be like the greatest fucking thing in the world. So that's what that music video was like right before that match, in my opinion. I thought it was great.
It was perfect, and. Yeah, like, if I'm... Like, that's the right way to steal from MMA, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's, like, the type of video you would see before, you know... Like, at the end of, like, the Brock Lesnar Velasquez special, you'll probably see a video just like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you steal from MMA. You don't make everyone the exact same mold, necessarily, like some, you know, Jewish wrestling reporters from San Diego or wherever he's from want you to believe...
Exactly.
No, you take the really good stuff. You don't take everything. And I think TNA took a really good thing with that video.
But, yeah, agreed.
And then that turn at the end, whoa, that was horrible. Like, yeah. But let's not get into that, because that's the internet's job, is to complain and bitch. That's not ours. But.
Yeah, and yeah, I was going to say, we'll just talk about the good, and like, I guess if you are going to check out Bound for Glory, I thought, Guns and Bucks, check it out.
Yeah, you know what, I'm probably full of crap, like... The majority of the people listening to this will probably love that match. It drove me nuts, because I'm expecting something a little more out of these guys as they develop, and like especially Alex Shelley, who I think knows better. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily Jin Mi. Like, I sound probably like a jerkweed saying this, but they probably don't know better, whereas Alex Shelley, who has a brain for this type of stuff and has proven it in certain places, that he knows how to make stuff like this work, I expected more out of him, instead of the whole video game wrestling deal. Like, the TNA X Division guys like to say the agents make them do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, Eric Young. Actually, if you're going to watch an Eric Young, Orlando Jordan versus Ink Inc. match, watch the TV match, because it was funnier. Like, and a lot of the really funny spots they did in the TV match as well. Though
like
I laughed.
From Explosion, right?
No, from the Impact before. Like,
oh, it was on it. Oh, really?
Yeah, they did, like... For some reason, like, I am Nick Glenn, Nick Mantle, whatever, right before I watched the Impact, because it aired while I was at work, and I'm like, wait, they put Ink and Eric Young and Orlando Jordan on the big live Impact to hype up the biggest show of the year? And he's like, wait, you still watch TNA? And that's beside the point. So, but then I watch it, and it does seem, like, completely pointless to even have this match on the show, but man, Eric Young was awesome in it. And, you know, Orlando Jordan, like, is not terribly shabby. He stands there, and he kind of goes, what? And, by the way, Eric Young makes the worst punchline of the year work. There's a line about, I don't care that he's bipolar.
Yeah.
And
I thought that was good. I liked it.
Horrible line. And then he, like, Orlando Jordan walks up in some awesome mask, and he's like, get away, devil. That was way funnier. I've ruined the entire show for you all, so don't watch it. Actually, quit watching wrestling. Start watching, I don't know, when we pull a DVD off the show. Start being August Rush enthusiasts. Just watch that movie all the time. Collect memorabilia. Go to conventions. And stalk Kerry Russell while you're at it.
Kerry Russell, let's finish this show like how we started, by talking about the sitcoms and... The Running Wild and stuff like that, I guess. Speaking of Running Wild, have you caught Better With You, I believe it's called?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's between The Middle and Modern Family.
No, because I have made a vow that I will not watch Modern Family until I get caught up on season one, which will be a while.
Yeah.
But because I really want to be caught up to everything, because I really want to be a huge Modern Family fan, but I let myself get behind. Like, I watched three episodes, and then I stopped being available to watch the shows, and I didn't have, like, a DVR to tape it at the time. So I'm, like, way behind on that show, and I just don't really pay attention to ABC otherwise. So
Modern Family is legit. I've been watching it since, like, it first aired. I think it's really good, so.
Yeah, which I know I need to be watching it. But.
Yeah.
You know.
And I guess let's just talk real quick about like what a steaming pile of shit Saturday Night Live has become, because that show is fucking terrible.
We watched it on Saturday here.
Yeah,
because
exciting.
I wanted to see Jane Lynch.
Oh, terrible.
And like the monologue, and it was all right. What you know, Jane Lynch has a certain presence about her.
Yeah, I don't watch Glee, so I don't get any of these those inside references that they're making.
And, like, they were really, like, good Glee inside references other than... There were, like, the Glee skit started out really well. Like, Kenan Thompson as Mercedes was amazing.
Yeah.
That was flipping great. And Fred Armisen as Artie was all right. The shtick repeated the... running, I'm just different because I have glasses type thing. That actually is kind of how they play up Artie to an extent on that show. Though they've given him way, way more depth than that.
Yeah.
By the way, if you can't tell people, I'm a huge Glee. Huge. I love that show. Thanks to this pretty little lady sitting on the couch here. And then they put one of those awful recurring characters in there.
Gilly.
Gibby's awesome. Sorry. Alex wanted me to let the world know that Gibby from iCarly's little brother on the show, Guppy, is way more adorable than Gibby. Because he is. But anyway, back to SNL. No, that character ruined the skit. What's the flippant point?
I think Kristen Wiig is terrible. I don't think she's funny.
I agree.
I don't get it.
And I think that movie was, like, if not the best movie of last year, the second best movie of last year. And I loved Adventureland to death. And if you haven't seen it, like, should. You really should.
No, I won't because she's in it.
She's in it for like 7 or 8 minutes max.
Really?
She's the worst part, but dude, Jesse Eisenberg gets a good performance out of even like Kristen Stewart. Which it is. It's a flippin' miracle. Like, they cast her perfectly because she's pretty much a drugged, hazed over chick who doesn't have to act the entire movie.
I'm gonna have to check that out too.
And Kristen Wiig just kind of stands in the background while other people act around.
Yeah.
So,
but the thing is, like, Saturday Night Live, just to finish up, there's funny people on it, there's some funny people on it, but it just doesn't work. It just tries too hard to be funny, and it fails. Saturday Night Live.
There was one good skit, I will give it credit. The new boyfriend talk show on Saturday, I thought was really funny and really clever.
Yeah.
But the rest of that crap, like...
Yeah, I didn't even like that. I don't know why. I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe I'm grading on a different skill set, because I knew coming in it would be terrible. But I just wanted to give it a chance, because I've heard this is like a turnover season, where like a lot of the cast that's been there for the past 5 years is heading out, and we have, you know, the Abby of the world stepping up, and that new black guy. But that guy was awful in Denzel skit, so I've heard his Obama's really good though. So
hey, I watched CZW on Saturday, so you really decide, listeners, what's better, you know. So.
Well, didn't we watch The Wonder Years for like 6 hours before that though? Yeah, we watched like 6 hours of the first season of The Wonder Years before that, so our entertainment burn was a little high.
I
was home all day because I've had the stomach flu, which who learns. But
I hope you feel better.
Thank you very much. I'm starting to feel a lot better. I can actually keep food down now, which is good times. Speaking of good times, let's wrap this up by hyping up what's going to happen Monday night. We're coming back 6 days later, which is like a new turnaround record for us, I believe.
Exactly.
With the band that we referenced earlier that used to fight the world, Joe Gagné. He's going to experience CZW live. He's becoming one of us, because I've experienced it live. You've experienced it live. And
now
you will in Massachusetts this week with a 3-match show.
Exactly.
Which features...
I'm sure there's more to be on it, but...
According to the the lineup for the Massachusetts show, apparently Nick Gage will fight whoever is the champion on that day. It does not say who is the champion.
Yeah, I think it's...
It's Moxley.
It's Moxley, obviously.
It's Moxley, but it makes it sound like he's going to be defending it 24/7 like Crash Holly.
Yeah, maybe he'll defend it at the airport. Not the airport, as if they're fucking flying in. At the fucking ball pit. Remember that? Remember how great that was? That was my favorite one out of all of them.
There was one in the ball pit. There was one in the hotel where like Crash was getting a massage or whatever.
Nah, it was in there at Cheesy Charlie's or whatever it was called.
Okay, one more thing before we wrap up. I'm sorry the show's going over an hour, but it probably won't because we're going to edit some stuff out.
Yeah, we got to edit that one part out.
Did you ever see Mad Mikey in TNA?
No, because he died soon after, right?
He died like three weeks after he debuted.
Yeah, this was like...
Because he died 2 days before I was supposed to see him wrestle like Ray Gordy at IWA.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the weirdest... Like, November 2003, Ian Rotten was flying in Ray Gordy to face Crash Holly.
Yeah, this was when they got, like, the... when they saw the weekly pay-per-views, but I wasn't watching it.
Dude, they did these skits with Mad Mikey called, like,
I followed it, but I never actually saw it. So.
Or, like, they actually sent, like... like Crash Holly into like a drive-through window, like a McDonald's, and he climbs through the window and starts attacking like the people that are making the food. And he like, all the skits are about things that make Mikey mad, and it's like toilet paper, and like Mikey runs out of toilet paper, and then he beats up the toilet. And these are like hilarious skits, like shockingly good for TNA in 2003. And then his video that he came out to. You've played WWF No Mercy, right?
Oh, of course.
Remember the like the really horrible Titantron videos with like the picture, the really blurry pictures that would like fade into each other?
Yeah, yeah.
That was like that dude. That was his entrance video. It was like a blurry picture of him, and then like a Microsoft Paint version of his logo, and then like another blurry picture of him, and then like he had one match on pay-per-view, I think, against Laz from NWA Wildside, of all like jobbers in the world. And it was the entire match was Laz doing his shtick, and it was amazing, and then he died.
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad.
Poor guy. But on that down note, yeah, Joe Gagne will be here next week to discuss CZW in Massachusetts, where hopefully nobody will die. And if they do, we'll be here to mourn the death.
If they do, we'll be here to talk about it.
Yeah, I'll promise to wear a suit. And with that, we're going to head out. Mike, say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye. I lost my way. That's what she said. Back to the world.